Concession number 25935.
Mr. Hall, rail 6. We're talking about you were at Portsmouth awaiting a posting.
Yes.
What happened when you got your next posting fairly quickly?
Yes, before the end of November, as far as I remember. They called all the boys. I think we didn't all go. Most of the boys went, but there must have been about 15 of us now left together, the group I was in, the mess I was in, there was about 15 of us. We were going on draft to the ship I'd seen when I was pulling in Portsmouth Harbour way back, and I said, that's a nice looking ship, I'd like to go aboard that. It was all white and buff funnels. She wasn't now, she was grey, and that was HMS Manchester, and she was alongside in Portsmouth. We had no pomp and pageantry of going aboard this one. We were put into a lorry with our kit bags and hammocks and driven down to the docks.
What were your first impressions on going aboard her?
What a nice vessel she looked, I think, was the first. I was still enthused about going aboard ships for some reason.
That hadn't gone away.
I mean, I was still harping back probably to my childhood of looking for the ship to come in. I think I just wanted to go to sea. I don't know. I just wanted to go to sea.
So you were quite keen. I
would go anyway. There was no hesitation about not wanting to go. I wanted to get back on board for some reason. I didn't like barracks very much for some reason.
Now, how did the ship compare to the Royal Oak? I mean, it was much smaller, wasn't it?
It was much smaller. There was not so much routine. Of course, remember that the most of the routine I had was probably part of peacetime routine, where we were now in a wartime routine. We still had the same commissioning to do, or we were given the commissioning cards where we were the mess decks, where what mess you were in, what locker you had, where you put your kit bag and hammock or whatever. What duties you were going to have, we still had that to do, but it seemed a lot easier, and they seemed, the ship's company, as I recall, seemed to be more, you were more in contact with them than you were on a big Royal Oak, where you seemed far apart, where our boys' mess deck was almost on top of the sailors' mess deck. There wasn't room to sort of part them too far away. We were in contact with them as we went through the mess decks, so we got to know most of the sailors in a very short time, the three badgemen and all this, you know, the real sailors.
How did you get on with the seamen?
I got on very well with them, as it happens. I got on very well with the older seamen in the Royal Oak. I seem to gel with the sort of seamen, I don't know, especially the older ones. I don't know. I suppose they take you under their wing and they sort of advise you on things. I don't know. And as a boy, sort of teaching you the rights and the wrongs of where to go and what to do and guiding you through it. Some of us, anyway. I found them very helpful.
So, now tell me about your mess deck. I mean, not the things that were the same, but I mean, how did the mess deck differ, the boys' mess deck, from the one you'd had on the Royal Oak?
A bit more open. They seemed to be bigger than on the Royal Oak. We seemed to be cramped into a little space down below decks, below the waterline, the boys' mess deck. On the Manchester, it wasn't. It was about two decks down. There was the seamen's mess deck under the forecastle, and then there was the boys' mess deck underneath that, and I was on the starboard side. And as you know, the mess decks and everything on the starboard side is marked as in numerical order or numbered, and it's all odd numbers on the starboard, even numbers to port. So I was on which was where we could tell which side of the ship we were on, really. So I was on the starboard mess deck. Once again, I was given duties of... my first duty, I think, I had was a side boy.
Now, what's that? You haven't mentioned that. You were...
This was my first duty I had, was a side boy, and that's on the quarter deck with the quartermaster, the officer of the watch or the officer of the day, greeting everybody or piping everybody that comes aboard over the onto the quarter deck, and also as sort of acting as messenger as well, running around for the quartermaster or the officer of the watch. That was in harbour. They didn't have side boys when you were at sea. They only had them in harbour. At sea, I was again on lookouts, or when we changed around, we didn't do all the jobs at the same time. They changed us around so that we'd have a good idea of where we were, and I would go down into the conning, not in the conning tower, into the steering position.
Now, I presume that the lookout duties were pretty well the same.
Yeah, the lookout duties are the same.
Tell me about the duties and the steering.
The steering on the Manchester was down below. You went down about two decks, I think. To where the wheelhouse was. We had a quartermaster down there who was usually either a leading seaman or an eight or senior able seaman. The boys were given the duties of either side of him. They had two. There was a telegraph stand, and the thing to the engine room, where you pulled your lever backwards and forwards, slower heads. Slower stern, full ahead, fuller stern, and the rev counter, where you do the revs, how many revolutions you're doing for whatever speed you're doing. So the boys were in charge of that.
So the quartermaster would give you your orders.
The quartermaster, they'd come down from the bridge and they'd say revolutions 2.5 or one revolution 100 or something, and you'd work up the revolutions to that speed. If the engine it didn't alter the thing on the telegraph thing. I mean, if it was going half ahead or half astern, it remained on that, but the revs would go up and down. All you were doing was making the screw go a little bit slower or a little bit faster without pushing your engines back or forwards. There were that jobs. There were boat's crew again, of course, either on the captain's barge or the ordinary motor cutter. When they were in harbour and being used. But we left, we weren't in Manchester, we weren't in Portsmouth very long, and we found ourselves up in Scapa Flow again within a very short time.
Now, were you actually part of the Home Fleet then?
We were part of the Home Fleet then, yes. Now, our first job...
Any worries about going back to Scapa Flow?
No. I didn't know we were going back to. We just went. I mean, we went to sea and eventually ended up in Scapa. I thought, good gracious, Scapa again, I suppose.
Do you know when you went up there? Would that be December or...?
That would be, yes, it would be about December. Now, for the next 2 or 3 months, which was early then, we're now into 1940, for the next couple of months, we did what we called Northern Patrol.
Now, that's very interesting. What exactly was the Northern
Patrol? Now, Northern Patrol was cruisers... lining from the across the Denmark Straits, that was from Iceland to Greenland, the Faroes, from Iceland to the Faroes, and then into the North Sea. So they had a cruisers sort of lining that distance along, and they did what they called a box patrol. In other words, you were going round like this, and every now and again you'd see the next door neighbour probably appear on the horizon if it was could see it, and we did that for about 2 weeks at a time. Now the idea was for trying to get merchant ships that were coming through from South America or other ports, or German ships or neutral ships that were getting through, that were trying to get back to either Norway or Germany, and they would become prize ships. If we spotted one or caught one, we would go over to her, stop her, and send a marine detachment aboard or a naval attachment armed, and they would take her back to Scapa.
Now, you wouldn't go on them as a...
No, I didn't. No, they were all either able seamen and a leading seaman and an officer, or marines.
Now, what was it like being on a Northern Patrol carrying out this box structure?
Boring. I think. I remember I used to spend hours in the waist of the Manchester just watching the sea and listening to all the sounds on board. It was in the late afternoon when the ship was fairly quiet. I could hear, you know, the guns crews talking above on the 4-inch guns, and I don't know, I used to enjoy just being on my own for a couple of hours at that stage for something. And I used to like watching it, but if it was rough, I used to like watching the ship roll and the wave come over into the waist and wash back out to the stern. I couldn't see it coming from far because that was the bridge and all that was in the way, because I'd be in the shelter of the waist. Then action stations would go, or defence stations, and I knew they'd sighted some ship or other that they wanted to investigate.
What were your defence or action stations?
My defence station was the a 4-inch gun, an AA 4-inch, and my action stations.
Yeah, tell us about that first. What exactly were you doing? Where was it? What were you doing?
Well, was it on the just after the boat deck or after the hangar deck? There were four. There were four 4-inch guns either side, two either side of the ship. They were twin turrets, 4-inch high angle things. So they were the secondary armament. That was our secondary armament. We'd do 4 hours on and 4 hours off or whatever on those while we were at defence stations.
What were you doing within the turret? You were actually...
It wasn't in a turret then. This is an open. Mostly talking, smoking when we were allowed to.
Sorry, what were you meant to be doing? Do you know what I mean? We were just
there in case we were needed. We had to. We were closed up so that we would have immediate readiness.
I mean, were you loaders or were you?
Oh, I was a loader at that time. In other words, the 4-inch shells were in ammunition things that stood up like they were about that high. I suppose the 4-inch things.
2 foot.
You had the cylinder of your cordite and then your shell on top. Now they had what they called a fuse on the top, because being as they were high angle, they had a fuse. So you'd get a fuse setting from the transmitting station, which was down below. You get a fuse setting, which the fuse setter put on with a thing like what you put over, like you open like a ratchet thing, I suppose, put over the top and put it onto whatever fuse thing they were going to for, and then that they would pick the thing up, hold it in your arms, and load it onto the tray, and then somebody would ram it home. And then you had a layer and a trainer, and a captain and a gun to look after. There were about five or six on the. Most of them were loaders, really.
Now, would you be learning the other part?
Learning all about. They'd change us round and give us little jobs to do when we weren't actually in action. We would have exercises. While we were on watch, we would do dummy runs. We would always be doing dummy runs. And they would change us round from time. The captain of the gun would say, all right, well, you be the layer today, and you be the and go other layer or trainer, which was just going up and following the you had this... thing on the front where you were a circle thing with things like a spider's web. So you had to learn which way a plane was coming in, what its estimated speed was, and how far you'd have to sort of put it so that you fire there when the thing was there. So by the time it should get there, the shell should have got there at the same time, if. If.
Did you actually practice this much?
Oh, yes, we had a lot of practice, especially while we were at sea.
But actually firing?
Yeah. We used to have, if we were coming near Scapa, we used to have perhaps a day out doing high angle shoots, and you'd have a drogue plane with a drogue behind it to fire at. Oh, we did all those sort of things.
Now, what about your action station?
The action stations was... in between, it was on a turret, 6-inch gun, a turret. And I was in between the left-hand gun and the centre gun, and sat in a place right forward of the turret. And my job there was to bring the shells up from the magazine and put them onto the like a slide that would come up onto the slide to go down onto a tray. The tray would go over by somebody else down the other end of the gun into the position of the breech. It would be rammed home. The cordite would be home, close the breech, ding ding, and fire. So mine was to bring up the, it was all hydraulic.
So what you operated the hydraulic?
Hydraulic, just to bring the shells up from below, from the magazine.
And who'd loaded them on? That's someone down below.
They would be in the magazines, which I never went down.
So you just operated the hydraulic machine?
Yeah, on the top, yes.
And how was that? I mean, did was it
quite interesting? Quite interesting. I remember that at this stage I'm still learning. I'm still learning about gunnery. I suppose it's really part of my training now. I was still learning about training. I was watching all the others, all the other seamen, the able seamen and the leading seamen that were in charge of each, and the petty officer that was stood up at the back with his periscope thing, looking at what he was firing at.
What was it like in the gun turret when it was in action and firing, or
practicing? I didn't have...
Sorry, practicing, you know, when you... Do you know what I mean? What was it actually like? The noise, the sound?
The noise and the sound was oh dear, how can I describe that? Exciting, I think, is the word I would use. I loved it. I love the... Not so much when we were actually in action, but when we were doing dummy runs... I used to like watching everybody doing their job. I loved it. I don't know. I can't explain.
Not too noisy for you. I mean, when
it was noisy. Well, inside wasn't all that noisy. Outside was probably a bit noisy. Those on the bridge probably a bit noisy, but outside was not. But if we were doing, if they were firing guns when I wasn't actually on watch. Or closed up, you'd be down below in the mess, and they were doing a broadside shoot or something, which you didn't always close up for. Everybody didn't go on the guns then, but you'd see everything come down from the deckhead. You know, there'd be dust and dirt, and the whole place would be a shambles in the mess decks where it hadn't been cleaned. I wonder they had captain's rounds. anyway, we that was on the Northern Patrol. After a couple of months of that, we went to the Firth of Forth. We went to up the Forth, and
to Rosyth, or
this was down to Rosyth, and we went down there.
It was February,
the start of the Norwegian campaign, the Norwegian invasion.
I'm not sure when that was, but a bit later than that, I think.
No, it was in 1940.
Oh yeah, yeah.
No. The first of Narvik and that sort of era. And we took the Green Howards. We loaded up with Green Howards. I remember we had a great contingent of Green Howards on board, and we took them over and we landed them at Mold. I think the place we went to was Mold.
Now, what do you remember about that operation? What was it like having the Green Howards aboard?
We didn't have much room to spare, I don't think, to get to creep all over. I remember they were all sort of full of themselves. The Green Howards were, you know, what they were going to do when they got there. They were all going into action. I don't think they'd probably been in action before, but they all knew what they were going to do. We had no trouble going over. We got alongside up the Norwegian field, one of the Norwegian fields, into Mold, and we landed the troops there.
Interfered with? I mean, no air attacks?
No, we didn't have any going over. I think they might have had further north, up towards Narvik way, but they hadn't had where actually we went in. We came out from there after we'd landed the troops and on the stores and guns and whatever we had to land. And I think we sort of... I don't know what happened after that. We just went out to sea and did patrols, I think, after that, while they were there. But within a week, we evacuated them from the same place. They had no guns with them. They were very disheartened. I mean, they were really a defeated... They really were. I think that the Germans had overwhelmed them.
And this was from
this
Mold
particular
again.
Spot. Yeah, we went back to
Is
the same
M-O-L-D,
place. M-O-L-D-E, Mold. It was Mold and Elder's Nest, I think it was.
And was there any trouble getting them?
Mold was being bombed at that time, and most of it was on fire because they were sort of fighting a rearguard action as much as they could. We went alongside and got as many off as we could. I think we got quite a lot off on board. There were a couple of destroyers as well getting the others off. And then we were bombed all the way back to Rosyth.
Now, what do you remember of that? Were you on the? Would you be on the?
I was now on my 4-inch guns, firing at whatever we could fire at. Bombs were. Look, we never actually got hit, but I saw a lot. There were a lot of near misses, with a lot of water getting sprayed aboard. The bombing is a bit frightening, I must say. It's a bit frightening to watch these bombs and hear these damn things coming down. And the ship altering course to try and clear whatever the captain could see, trying to zigzag out of them. That was a bit frightening. That was a bit nerve-wracking. Although I think because you're doing something, you're firing back, at least you're doing something, even if you don't hit anything, which invariably you didn't anyway. Anyway, we got there. From there, we went to Immingham for a little while because the Dunkirk was at this stage as well.
And what were you doing at Immingham?
We were there as a guard ship in case the anything came out from the Skagerrak out from Denmark. There as a sort of a guard ship, I think. While Dunkirk was being, that was the closest we could get, was Immingham. We stayed there for a few weeks, I think, while
so
Dunkirk was on.
There,
nothing really happened there.
Now, how are you getting on with the lads? Aboard.
Oh, I'm quite well. I'm getting now into the routine. There was no animosity. I was friendly with quite a few. Very friendly with quite a few. There were a lot of pals I'd made up. But I'm still a boy. Well, I'm still in the boys' mess.
Very similar backgrounds to yourself, most of them.
Yes, I think so. Well, there were a few that. I suppose there was a few across the board, but most of them we eventually sort of gelled together. We were all doing the same training. We were all sort of. I suppose you don't make friends with everyone. I suppose there's some I never got on well with.
No fights.
I can't remember any fights. And I don't remember specifically any bullying. There was probably a few heated arguments every now and again. Somebody would probably do something or other which was silly, silly little things in a mess deck, I suppose, like pinching somebody's food or taking something from someone or disturbing them when they were trying to write a letter or things of that nature. Ordinary squabbles of schoolboys, I suppose, practically, as we probably still were, grown-up schoolboys, perhaps.
You'd still only be, what, 16?
Well, I'm still 16 and a half, well, I'm towards 16 and a half now, I suppose.
What about the petty officers here and the officers aboard? I mean, was...
I got on well with most of my officers that I had, my divisional officers. Unfortunately, I can't remember ever being in trouble.
Did they look after you? I mean, did they take a paternal welfare care?
Well, if they didn't, the padre did. The padre was always with us. Now, we could go to the padre at any time we felt homesick or lonely or we didn't like anything. We could go and have a discussion with him. I never went very much to him. There was nothing I really had much to do about. I got on with the job I was given. I was determined to keep my nose clean, I think, even in those days. I didn't want to have any punishment. I didn't like the idea of being punished for anything. I don't know. I may have been... I just wasn't that nature, I don't think, then. I enjoyed what I was doing. I enjoyed being at sea. I enjoyed being in the Navy then.
Now, what about the mess system on the Manchester? Was that general mess?
The mess was still general mess, and we still had cooks to the galley to go up and get the food. We had nothing to do with the food on there.
With, say, the Royal Oak?
About the same, as I recall. You had breakfast, whatever it was, either kippers... Or sausage and tomatoes, or scrambled eggs. I don't think we ever had fried eggs very much, but mostly scrambled eggs, porridge, and then normal either roasts on a Sunday. We had ordinary sort of meals that you'd have anywhere, I suppose, really. The food was always very good, and enough of it for us anyway. I never sort of wanted for food.
What about Kai, Coco? Did you get that? Tell us a bit about that.
Yes, the Kai. That was chocolate, real hard, dark chocolate with flecks of white in it. It was all flecked of lots of white. I don't know what the white was, actually, to tell you the truth. But it used to be ground or cut up or sliced up into and put in a big mess fanny or a big urn. And it would be very sweet, very thick, and very dark. But it was good. It really was. I used to look forward to my Kai when I was on watch. You only got it when you was on watch. You didn't get it anywhere else.
Who made it for you? I mean,
the galley made that. You went to the galley and you got this fanny full of Kai and you went back to your post with it, and that was enough for that crew.
You'd pour it into everyone's mug.
Well, sometimes you only had one mug.
But you took it in turns then.
And you dipped it in and drank, and the other one had dipped it in and drank. So we were very fussy about getting foot and mouth disease, I'm afraid.
And it really warmed you up.
It really did. It was something to look forward to.
Because you didn't get rum, did you?
No, no. And they didn't get rum. They didn't get rum while they were on watch anyway.